And welcome back to another exciting episode of Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Mike Gillis, and joining me in the studio, Becky Friedman.
Hello, Mike.
And joining us again, friend of the show, published author, Bob Seidensticker.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Excellent.
I wish I could say the same thing.
Uh-oh.
I got into trouble at work last night.
Oh, well, dear, Mike.
Well, not again? Real trouble. Not real trouble. I had a customer complain about me. I work in retail, you may know. We were closing up, and this guy stepped out of line so that I wouldn't help him. And then when he talked to my manager later, claimed that I was plotting to turn him into a lesbian.
Oh, you secret atheist plotting to turn people into lesbians.
It has happened.
It has?
Or maybe not. Turning men into lesbians, that's strange.
That's hard work. I'm not sure if I'm up for it. I think it would actually involve some sort of sex reassignment, something I am not qualified to do.
Talk about a homosexual agenda.
But anyways, apparently I'm plotting, and I don't believe he knew I was an atheist, but I don't think that would have helped.
Well, is it have anything to do with the gay agenda at having to do with comics?
In this fact, there is that I guess you could say Kevin Bacon-esque connection here. The 1 Million Moms, we talked about them last week. That's the fundamentalist group affiliated with the Theocratic American Family Association. They've retreated from Facebook after their latest campaign against DC Comics backfired and blew up in their faces. The Christian group had posted that their opposition to DC's announcement that the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, would be reinterpreted as a gay man in future issues of the Earth 2 comic book. The 1 Million Moms didn't count on at this point was that the people on Facebook were going to flood them with comments supportive of DC and critical of them.
They first imagine that Facebook users are critical of Christian moms who think that people shouldn't buy comic books because it features a gay man.
Because just the presence of a gay person is enough to be harmful to people. That's the same attitude they took before. So anyways,
well, if we don't talk about them, then they won't be present, right? They won't exist, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like Rumpelstiltskin, that naming it gives it all this power. So they tried at first to delete all of these comments supportive of it. That didn't work because they were just coming in too fast. Then they tried to get rid of the thread. That didn't work. So they basically took the entire Facebook page offline with the story that they were going offline temporarily to go to Vacation Bible School.
Vacation Bible School ceases all Facebook status updates? Is that the idea?
That you just pull up stakes, you disappear, you look at the place where their website used to be, there's just a little tumbleweed going by.
Wow, 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 wow.
So nobody seems to be buying this because this is, oddly enough, exactly what they did when the negative backlash came after they tried to get Ellen DeGeneres fired as the spokesperson for JCPenney. Again, a lot of people came out saying, hey, I want to buy a lot of stuff at JCPenney's now. The same way that the Archie Comics thing that they protested because it also featured a gay character created a backlash and that issue sold out. They pull up stakes, they try to disappear, and I guarantee you that in a week from now, if you went to their website, you're not going to be able to find the term Green Lantern anywhere on it.
Man, I really would love to hear from someone who actually boycotted JCPenney or is boycotting DC Comics for featuring gay people in their storylines or in their advertising. I would just love to hear from someone that is aligned with these 1 Million Moms, because I really want to know sort of what the reasoning is. Like, what is really the reasoning? Is it harmful to your children? What aspect of having that exposure is harmful to your children? Besides the fact that it's, apart from the fact that there's one line in the Bible that says it's an abomination. So we do have a phone number that you can call if you want to tell us that about that. If you are one of the million moms, and that phone number is 253-584-1480. We're Ask an Atheist, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it's what's so funny about this is that this is we've hit a point in our culture, we've hit a point in our history on the issue of gay rights, and the stigma has been transferred. Not just from when these sort of issues come up, like, oh my God, they have a gay person representing this company. There used to be this stigma not even 15 to 20 years ago where that person would have gotten fired and, oh my God, they're gay, and then they'd have to become a pariah. That stigma has changed, and it's now being put on the people who are anti-gay rights. And people like 1 Million Moms and American Family Association just can't deal with it.
And you've heard of the Republican strategist who's saying that very thing. He's seeing the poll numbers change by maybe 1% per year in the past, and now it's more like 5% per year in favor of same-sex marriage. So I think that the numbers really bear that out.
Yeah, it's one of these things where there's going to be a point where these people are not going to be looked on kindly by history, and that day is coming a lot sooner than they're prepared for.
I think it actually came very very quickly this last week with something with the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston.
Yes.
Tell us about that, Mike.
Yeah, the First Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that the Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage federally as a union between man and woman, is actually discriminatory against same-sex couples by denying them federal benefits. The law was brought in, signed by President Clinton in 1996, when it looked like Hawaii was going to legalize same-sex marriage. That didn't actually happen, but since then, dozens of states have passed anti-gay marriage constitutional amendments, and 8 states have legalized it. The appeals court actually agrees with a lower circuit court judge who ruled in 2010 that the law was unconstitutional. It didn't actually talk about the provision in the bill that basically says that states will not be forced to recognize marriages from other states, just the fact that they would be denied federal benefits.
Well, I'm certainly glad to see any time a law that is influenced by, you know, religious dogma thrown out. I'm certainly glad to see that.
And it's interesting that Washington State in November maybe will be the first one to have a law passed not just by the legislature, but actually by a citizens' initiative. That'll be a first.
Yeah, that every single time that same-sex marriage has come to a vote to this point, there has always been the people have always thrown it out. And that's quickly changing. If you've looked at the poll numbers that have been put out, it's looking more and more like 55% of Washingtonians that are likely to vote in this next election will basically vote to affirm same-sex marriage, and only 35% against it, with the remaining amount of people being undecided. But that is a huge change given where this debate has gone every other time. And if you look at the vote numbers every time this comes up, it gets closer and closer and closer. And this may be the first one. So, you know, go Washington.
Go Washington, indeed. So we have with us today Bob Seidensticker, and we're really happy to have you back. Bob is a retired software engineer and author. He's active in local skeptics and atheists and humanist groups in the Seattle area. Bob, you've got 2 nonfiction books under your belt, and you've recently published your first novel, Cross-Examined, An Unconventional Spiritual Journey, where the backdrop is the aftermath of the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire. That book focuses on Pastor Paul in Los Angeles, who's torn between 2 ideas of men in his midst, the charismatic prophesying pastor and an atheist who engages in debates and defenses of Christianity.
That's right.
We'll get a little bit into the book a little bit later on in our hour. We're so glad to have you here with us today. Mike, you have some questions about Bob. You know, your book, Bob, focuses on the question of apologetics. And you recently attended an apologetics conference. And Mike, you had some questions for Bob on that.
Yeah, this wasn't just in a conference. You didn't just drive to Seattle to go to this conference. You actually flew to France. For those unfamiliar with the concept of Christian apologetics, what is it?
Apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia, which means defense. So if you were in court when it was your time to say, no, I didn't do it, you would be giving an apologia. So in this context, Christian apologetics is the intellectual defense of Christianity.
So, what did you expect to see at this conference? I mean, did anything that you see surprise you in any way?
As you mentioned, it was in France. It was in Strasbourg, France, which was just a beautiful place. Just spending 2 weeks there would be reason enough to go. But what I expected to do was to see the absolute best in Christian apologetics. I've been a student of this for some years now. I've read a lot of books, and I really wanted to make sure that no one could say, well, you've been just a dabbler. You don't have a degree in this. You really don't know what you're talking about. I really wanted to give the apologetics community a good shot at showing me what they've got. I contacted them, and I said, your conference intrigues me. I'm thinking about coming, but, you know, FYI, just full disclosure, I'm an atheist. What do you think? Can I come?
So you actually just put it out on the table before that even started.
Right from day one, exactly. Right before I even attended, I was very clear about that. And when I was there, I was totally out with my fellow students. So it was not quite what I expected.
So what was the response to them having an attendee who was an atheist? Did they snub you? Did they get more aggressive?
Well, first, let me say that they were very polite. I never felt unwelcome. I was welcome as part of the conference. That was very clear. The thing that was strange about this is we're at not just any conference, not just any Christian conference, but Christian apologetics. This is the defense of Christianity. So from my standpoint, I'm the homework. You know, here you guys want to practice with this stuff? Well, here I am. I've got a target on my chest. And that is not how it went. It was just so strange. This is not just your random Joe or Jane Christian. These are people spending some serious cash to go to this place and get a serious education. They're serious. And yet they really did not engage with me.
So did you ever get any chance to engage with any of them? Any conversations come out of this?
There was one guy who I appreciate his response. I had to go out to this guy and say, you know, almost, you know, slap him, saying, you know, what's going on here? I mean, here I am. How come you guys aren't engaging with me? And he did. We had a nice chat over several evenings. But that it was just him, that I had to, it was pulling teeth, was just such a strange thing. I do have a theory about that. I do think I understand why that was. I think that many of these people, anyway, were not there to get to the top of the game, to be apologists, to really be going externally. They were more focused internally. Their little ship of Christian belief is leaky. That's why they were there. They wanted to have someone patch it up for them. And having me jump in their rowboat and rock it around was not a good idea. That was not part of the plan.
So this is more about holding on to beliefs rather than convincing other people of them?
I think so. I think it was very internally focused as opposed to externally focused. Now, of course, some of these were pastors. Some of these were sort of professional apologists. And yet, even with those guys, it's almost like, you know, what do we have to do to make you engage with me? Very strange. And just an aside, after the event, there was a couple of emails going around, hey, guys, just in case you want to connect afterwards. I thought, great, now we're really going to have our community. Now we're going to have some online debates, engaging, that kind of stuff. And that, again, didn't happen.
Nothing?
Very little. It was me pushing. I mean, why is it the atheist who's got to push these things? And I pushed a bit, and didn't really happen. So very surprising.
So the big complaint that a lot of atheists and skeptics have about Christian apologetics is that all they seem to do is just rehash and retread a lot of the same old arguments about design or a first cause or a creator and all that stuff. But this seems like this is the place that if you were going to get something new to come out, it would show up here. Did you see anything new at this conference that you haven't seen before?
I really didn't. The guy who was behind this is John Warwick Montgomery. And his was a name that I wasn't really familiar with. But apparently, 20, 30 years ago, he was the big name. He was the William Lane Craig of that period. And he's about 80 now. Very nice guy. Very smart guy. Has 3 doctorates. And he was behind the whole thing. He had a staff of 4 other teachers, professors, speaking there. I learned some interesting things. Teacher was an expert on C.S. Lewis. One was an expert on Islam. I learned a few things about that that were quite interesting. But in terms of actual apologetics, things that made me say, no, I thought I really had this all together, but this really shakes my lack of faith, didn't happen.
So ideologically, where were the people who ran this conference? I mean, were they talking about old Earth creationists, young Earth creationists? Were they of a certain denomination?
Certainly creations of some sort. I think they could probably, as is typical in many Protestant gatherings, disagree on young versus old. But in terms of evolution being nonsense, I think they were all on the same page there. They were all Protestant. They were all fundamentalist-ish. So they were of a similar bent. I believe the actual origin of this is Lutheran. But so Lutheran and then, you know, similar strains.
I know that in my experiences, whenever I'm surrounded by believers and they know that I'm a non-believer, they sometimes either people can get more aggressive or sometimes they might even hold back, that there's a certain level of self-awareness there where they don't say the truly crazy things because they know how it looks to an outsider. Did you ever get the impression that they were holding anything back around you?
You know, perhaps that was part of it. They among their own sect, they might well, you know, talk about this kind of stuff as sort of a way to pat themselves on the head. I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe they realize that we have an outsider here and we kind of have to be in our best behavior. So let's just kind of keep the nutty stuff to ourselves. Very strange that they didn't engage me any more than they did.
But was there really any difference between this and the sort of apologetic sort of lectures that you can find on the internet, whether it's William Lane Craig, Lee Strobel, Kent Hovind? Was there any sort of material, even in the way it was presented, that was really different than something that wouldn't take a plane trip?
There really wasn't. I thought it was a great conference. I really enjoyed it. I think it was a worthwhile experience. But actually, in terms of the actual intellectual content, you're right, there was nothing new. I can get the same information from books, best of all, and certainly YouTube videos, as you mentioned, engaging with people on the internet. So that was not a unique thing. I kind of sensed that was going to be the way it would play out, but I did want to give it the best shot.
So at least you got a trip to France out of it.
that's true. It was definitely a worthwhile thing, and I do think that I've sort of shored up a plank in my defense. No one can say that I really haven't given this a shot. I've actually been to this, what they bill as you know, the most serious conference on this topic, 2-week conference.
So would you go to a conference like this again? And also, would you recommend other atheists go to conferences like this?
If they do, I would recommend that they learn from what I've done. And that is, your gut that's going to say you're not going to learn anything new is correct. You probably won't learn anything new. If you're a well-educated atheist, you're well-read on this topic, this material, it really isn't going to be new. For a chance to engage in a new situation, which is really my favorite thing to do, that is my hobby. I love engaging Christians. I love being pushed. I love coming up against new ideas that make me think. That'll be new. That'll be fun.
So I'm just going to ask you to speculate on this one, Bob. I know that you can't really give the answer because you're not a mind reader, but... why is it that you don't think these Christians have that same desire to sort of throw themselves against something different to test their beliefs? What is it that they're not wanting to throw themselves into a new situation? Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I really think that they sense that their own faith is not on the rocks necessarily, but is questionable. I come across topics where people talk about their own unbelief. How do you handle your own unbelief? After all, we've all had it, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that is just maybe plague is the wrong word for it, but is a real issue for them. And I think that's the problem.
Well, Bob, thank you so much. We're going to go into the break right now. We've been listening to Bob Seidensdecker on Ask an Atheist. You can give us a call if you've got a question for Bob, 253-584-1480. We'll see you after the break.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And we're back at Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I'm Becky Friedman, and with me is Mike.
Hey.
And Bob Seidensticker.
Hello.
For today. We've got a fun email, actually, of email feedback from one of our listeners. And if you've got a question or some feedback to give us, you can go to askanatheist.tv and give us your feedback there by asking a question. Mike, what has Derek from Denver got for us today?
Yeah, it's a correction, but we just have to own it because occasionally we say things that aren't exactly true, and it's important for us as skeptics to be able to accept correction. This was on the email we got. Derek says, love the show, but give it up on the Denver Alien Office. I think I commented last time you guys brought this up. Basically, one guy managed to get a measure on the ballot, and just like the Balrog on the bridge, it did not pass.
And this is in reference to something we brought up last week, where someone wanted to have an alien office, a Denver-based city Bureau of Investigation of Alien Sightings.
Basically like the Men in Black in the Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones movie, where in the event of an alien invasion or visitation, that these guys would basically be the Earth Embassy.
Something like that. Hey, I think Tacoma could do with one of those.
I don't even know where to start with that one.
Maybe I'll start my own ballot measure.
So it's not supposed to be like the Ellis Island for aliens, where they come in and get processed and come on into... It's the opposite, I suppose.
No, I think maybe there's a touch of that, that when they come in, that they come in, then you talk to the aliens, and then if they have ray guns, you shoot at them.
Well, in any case, we are very we are not in need of an alien investigation office at the city level, because it's highly unlikely that they're going to be getting alien visitors. So, thanks, Derek from Denver.
I also imagine that if aliens did land, that would be something for the federal government.
Probably.
Because aliens could land in, I don't know, maybe Arizona, and that could end really badly for all of us as a species.
Possibly. So, Bob, before the break, you were telling us about the apologetics conference that you had attended in France. Christian apologetics is one of your your sort of interests, and engaging with Christians on these topics is one of your hobbies. Is that correct?
That's right.
And you've recently written your first novel that it takes a really novel, will I say, approach to these kinds of arguments. Can you tell us a little bit about your novel, Cross-Examined?
Yeah, just to take a step back, I had, as you mentioned, done a couple of fiction books, and that was that's my strength in terms of writing. So my thought was to approach this, my new hobby, my new love of apologetics and counter-apologetics, as nonfiction. And yet,
or fiction, rather.
Well, I was thinking about nonfiction, but the problem is it's been done a bazillion times. I mean, we have the New Atheists with Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and those guys, and I think I can add a little bit to the conversation, but, you know, I've got stiff competition. So why not do it as fiction? That's the idea. I know of no book that approaches Christian apologetics and counter-apologetics as a novel. So that was the novel approach to it.
Excellent. So you've got three main characters. Well, your main character, your protagonist, is Paul. And when we meet him, he's kind of this aimless young man. He's living on the streets after a childhood in an orphanage. What sort of happens to Paul? How does he sort of encounter these ideas of atheism versus Christian apologetics?
He gets swept off the street by a charismatic pastor who takes him under his wing and cleans him up and gives him a job and that sort of thing. There's actually a interesting historical, actual true event that the story is built around. Let me just cover that real quick if I could. There's something called the Azusa Street Revival, and Azusa Street in Los Angeles had a crazy nutty church in 1906, getting a lot of press. The front page of the LA Times on the day of the San Francisco earthquake talked about this nutty church with a prediction of something terrible happening. So this church says something terrible is going to happen, and in fact it did. And for apparently decades after that, this church was, you know, the most famous church in America. People came and try to find out, how come you have a red telephone to God? What is your secret? So very famous church. That's a true story. And I said it in this church, with the pastor being the man who made that prediction.
It sounds really, I mean, it's I've read it. It's an excellent, sort of really intriguing, compelling story with this earthquake. You know, it takes place in the wake of that particular disaster. Could this same story, do you think, have taken place, say, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina or Joplin, Missouri tornadoes? So what drew you to this turn of the century California setting?
It did limit a few things. For example, apologetics arguments about DNA, for example. don't make any sense because this is 1906. I think that you certainly could imagine a hurricane pushing people. But what I find fascinating about that, which again is a topic that I really didn't discuss, is you've got disasters pushing people in opposite directions. So I remember being quite moved by a Holocaust survivor's comment. His point was, this was a Jewish man, the Holocaust exists, therefore God doesn't. That was his thinking. I get it. It makes sense to me. Then you have someone like Corrie ten Boom, a Christian who was, she was Dutch. She was in Amsterdam. Her family was hiding Jews. They got caught. They got sent to the concentration camps. Her faith was increased. And she spent the rest of her life going around the world and trying to imagine where God is sending her. So it's an incredibly stressful event like this, like Katrina, like the tornado, pushes people in different directions.
Seems to be there's a bit of a Rorschach test when it comes to traumatic sort of situations. And for instance, I know people who, every time I hear a story about a near-death experience, people tend to see exactly what they expect to see.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I've known people who've been clinically dead while going under, say, heart surgery, and they see nothing, but then you have somebody who claims to see, you know, a Catholic sees Catholic imagery, a Hindu sees Hindu imagery, but you don't see a lot of that sort of stuff. Do you think...
That would be compelling. I mean, if you have a Muslim who says, I saw this strange woman, her name was Mary, and she says that her son what is going on here? I need to investigate this. That would be an interesting story. And yet, as you mentioned, it's always going to be colored by what his background is.
Well, I'd love to bring it back to some of the characters in your book. So you have this character, Paul, and he is taken under the wing of this charismatic pastor that's modeled on this Azusa Street revival.
Right.
Sort of what happens to Paul? He sort of wrestles with these moral and logical questions. What's sort of the setting of that?
In the aftermath of the earthquake, this is, as I mentioned, a seriously hot church. They're getting all these reporters from around the country. The pastor wants to make the most of this. He only has one assistant, that's Paul, and he says, you need to get out in the community. We need to make the most of this, and you need to evangelize to people. He comes across this, what's the opposite of charismatic? He comes across this rather unpleasant atheist, and when Samuel, the pastor, hears about that, he says, okay, hold it. That's the guy. That is your test. That's your field trial. You convert that guy, that's what we're looking for. So now he really is kind of the pawn between these two great men, these two intellects. The pastor who says, you need to try this, you need to try that. You know, here's how you need to improve your argument. And the atheist who is increasingly compelling, that's his challenge.
Now, I'm sensing that you might model that character of the atheist, Jim, somewhat on either the well-spoken atheist that we've encountered, that we've read about, or perhaps yourself. Is this the case?
I think largely me.
I would like to deem you unpleasant, per se. I actually find you quite charismatic.
Well, thank you. As you can imagine, having a story where the pastor is just this nasty person and the atheist is charitable and nice and beautiful, and that's not a story, that's just a caricature. That is not gonna fly. A character which is totally good or totally bad is just does not make for good fiction. So I want to make this guy, he's got some rough edges. He's got some issues. He's got some problems. And actually, Paul and Jim, the atheist, help each other through that. But... yeah, my own thinking was pretty much the background for him.
And now, as Paul wrestles with these issues between sort of religious belief and atheism, you know, we get a really good intimate view into these sort of agonizing questions of personal morality and personal belief. Was that modeled on any kind of other conversations you've had with people in the atheist community or with people in the Christian community? How did you sort of get into the head of that character?
Well, one challenge I had in making apologetics and counter-apologetics actually a character in this book is that you really have to watch out for this being as interesting as watching grass grow or paint dry. That this is just like watching a chess match. And yet, Christians will say this is the most important question ever. So I it was fairly easy to work into the story. This coming back, Samuel keep saying, you know, this is not just a game here.
And Samuel's our pastor character.
Exactly. So as he was coaching Paul, okay, we're going to go out another time. Here's what you need to do. This is, again, the most important question ever. So.
Excellent. Well, you're listening to Bob Seidensticker on Ask an Atheist. If you've got a question for Bob, feel free to give us a call at 253-584-1480. Bob, parallel to the story of Paul and these two men, the pastor and the atheist, we've got the story of Thena, and that's sort of his love interest in this. And she's a victim and refugee of this San Francisco earthquake, far away from where the majority of the plot takes place in Los Angeles. She's being cared for by clergy, and she comes across a Catholic monk who rebuffs her inquiries about Old Testament logic and basically says you're not trained to interpret the Bible correctly. And then she comes across also a Buddhist monk who advises her she should read lots of sacred texts from a variety of religions. Common of a response from different various clerics and clergy do you think this is? Is this a common response that you've encountered from both Buddhists and from Catholics?
I think it's authentic. I might have taken a few liberties. The Catholic priest, Father Mondegreen, is a nice guy. He would love to help you if he could, but he's very rigid. Women have their place. A woman questioning this is just not the way it works. That's my job, and so on, is where he's coming from. And then we have a Buddhist monk. He's here to minister to his own community, to the Japanese people in the San Francisco area. And he has a much more, from our standpoint, open-minded view. He says, I'm a Buddhist. I'm in a Christian country. I care about Christianity. I care about Christians. I want to understand where they're coming from. So this is a great chance in this monastery where the priest is a refugee, as well as Thena, to see this clash of how they approach things. This is one chance where I use a little artistic license, and the Christian guy kind of comes up with on the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, sort of that conversation really is distilled into this one really wonderful line from the Buddhist monk saying, my answers won't be your answers, and just remember that you're on an important journey. I think that it was really, to me, that characterized a lot of the journey of both Thena and the main character, the protagonist, Paul, and I like that a lot.
And try to imagine not a whole lot of Christians even today would be saying that I have my path, and my path is welcome to you, but there are lots of other paths, and I encourage you to consider those also. That's not very typically Christian today.
Yeah. Do you think that it was in any of your research around the time period or in your sense of things, do you think that was pretty common in around 1906, about 100 years ago?
I think it is authentic to Buddhism in general, both then as well as today.
So there's also one sort of hot button issue that comes up, and that's that the pastor Samuel, he tries his hand at a congressional seat. We're seeing a lot of politics mixing with religion and some interesting ways in which that's playing out now, in 2012. Do you think that religion was a hot-button issue like it is now in politics in 1906?
It seems to me that it really has, it's much worse today, and by worse I mean much more prevalent. Of course, the Constitution has Article 6, which says that there can be no test for public office, and yet you see in the primaries so far, we see candidates crawling all over themselves trying to show how they're more Christian than the last guy.
So are you saying there may not be an explicit religious test, but in the test there's a public opinion test that you must be religious?
Now there certainly is. So I think that is a difference we're seeing between this and the present day. At the time, the bigger difference, I think, if we were to go back then, is to see all the different parties. Right now, you've got Republicans and Democrats, and there are other parties which kind of don't count. There were a lot of third parties back then, but they were a little bit stronger. In the seat that the actual seat in the 72nd district that this pastor runs for, there were both Democrats and Republicans, as well as Prohibition and Socialist candidates. There's Union Labor, there's People's Party, there's Working Men, there's lots of other parties at the time that reflect the different issues of the time.
Well, wonderful. Bob's book is called Cross-Examined, an unconventional...
Spiritual journey.
So an unconventional spiritual journey. Bob, how can we read Cross-Examined?
It's available on Amazon. It's in both paper and ebook. I encourage you to go check it out.
And we actually at Ask an Atheist have a special treat from Bob. He has said that the next 5 listeners who contribute $100 to Ask an Atheist by Saturday, June 9th at 6 p.m., you will be able to receive an autographed copy of Cross-Examined. And why are we asking for contributions, Mike? This is something we have unfortunately had to do, but we enjoy the support of our listeners and viewers. Mike, tell us about our contributions.
Well, Peggy's Challenge is this thing we've been doing for, I believe, 2 months now, where Peggy from Kent, Kent, Washington, called us and challenged listeners to support our show, help keep us on the air, help keep the lights on, and you guys have kind of floored us with the support you've given us so far. This week we have contributions. Louise from Denmark, for the third week in a row, has given us a donation. Thank you, Louise. We really appreciate it. It's really kind of heartening to know that folks like what we do enough that they're willing to forego maybe a latte this week for us. Also, Laura from Austin, Texas, Roland from the Netherlands, and Michael from Jersey Village, Texas. So thank you, guys. If you want to make a donation or contribution to Ask an Atheist yourself, go to askanatheist.tv. There's a yellow button on the left-hand side of the screen that says Donate. Click that and give until it feels right, I think, is the phrase people like to use.
Or give until you hit that mark, and you will be the recipient of an autographed copy of Cross-Examined. And so our final contributor this week, of course, is Bob Seidenstecker. Thank you so much for being with us here today. We'll see Bob after the break when we come back again. And we'll be talking about a few other things, a few of Bob's activities, how you can interact with him online and interact with us.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
No human is burdened with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show on the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. I'm Becky. With me today is Mike and Bob. Welcome back. We have 20 minutes left to the top of the hour, and we'd love to take a call. We've been hearing from Bob, who recently released his first novel called Cross-Examined, a novelized version or an account of dealing with Christian apologetics. Now, Bob, you love discussion and debate, and you found a really neat way to engage your readership with two particular blogs. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, the two blogs are GalileoUnchained.com and CrossExaminedBlog.com. I have two doorways to the same content, kind of trying an experiment here. Galileo Unchained is the one for the more atheist-leaning reader, and more for the Christian, a little more Christian gentle, is the CrossExaminedBlog.com.
And sort of, how's that working out? Are you getting any responses to the book or discussion on that?
I am. I've gotten some readers have given me some great feedback. And as an author, you can imagine that really just really makes my day. Someone who, a stranger who says, read the book and loved it. So that's been terrific. What I also enjoy is engaging on some challenging issues. I've put up about 160 blog posts. I don't really pull any punches, so it's engaging, but I think civil. So that's the balance that I'm trying to have here. This is not going to pat Christians on the head. This is going to be engaging. So if you want a good debate, a good argument, something to push back against, please come check it out.
And what are the web addresses for those two websites again?
GalileoUnchained.com, that's for the atheists, and CrossExaminedBlog.com for Christians.
And what are some of those issues that you blog about on Galileo Unchained?
All kinds of stuff. I've talked about current events, not as much about current events as lots of other blogs. Mine is more kind of time invariant things. These are...
Do you continue discussions on apologetics?
We do. We do. We talk about arguments in favor of Christianity and why I don't think they're all that great. We talk about arguments in favor of atheism, and that's a little bit unusual. So often... atheists are going to be focusing on here's an argument, transcendental argument, Pascal's wager, here's why it doesn't make any sense. But what I try to do is try to argue in favor of atheism. And then there's also quite a bit on social topics, homosexuality, gay marriage, pro-choice abortion issues, that sort of thing.
Sounds great. Now, Bob, you're also an active skeptic and logician. If you've got a question for Bob, go ahead and call us at 253-584-1480. Now, Bob, you recently engaged in a comment thread on Kingdom International, their website.
Yes.
And I just found this, I was just completely tickled by this. Their ministry, which is based out of Western Washington, claim that they have halted the recent pertussis outbreak with prayer.
That's what they claim. Now, Washington State has a pertussis at epidemic proportions. This is whooping cough, by the way. It's this disease, you know, ebbs and flows, and right now we've got it pretty bad. There were about 21 cases in Jefferson County. That's where Port Townsend is, and that is fact one. Fact two is these people prayed. So I can just let you draw your own conclusion. There's your cause and effect, and that's about as heavy and deep as the logic went with this ministry. I try to engage them in trying to say, look, the last thing I want to do is just caricature you, is to lampoon you, to make you look foolish for no good reason. But if there's a good reason, I'm going to make you look foolish. So help me, work with me here. I mean, am I missing something? And what I got back was, oh, that's just the beginning. The pertussis is the beginning. I had a bad knee and it's fixed. And there's a woman who had lung cancer and she's healthy now and all this stuff. And of course, I'm wondering, all right, well, you know, give me the bigger picture. How about x-rays before and after? How about doctor's testimony before and after? I mean, as a skeptic, I'm just trying to help you out here, guys. You know, give me a real serious case.
So this is full-on faith healing. Prayer will cure our ills at the exclusion of medical intervention?
Well, that would be especially worrisome, and I don't think that's the case. They had no problem with vaccines for pertussis.
That's good to hear.
It is good, which of course makes me wonder, okay, you're seeing an epidemic wane. You're seeing the public health service jump in to fill the gaps. You know, why is the natural explanation not complete? I'm confused.
I'm a little bit happy by the fact that they don't seem to be anti-vaccine people.
Exactly. That's the silver lining here, that they weren't saying prayer only. That was the good thing.
Now, I haven't followed the whooping cough outbreak, but has this actually been tied to the anti-vaccine sentiment that seems to be growing?
I think not. So, when I read this first, I thought, oh, this is just, you know, anti-vax nuts who reject vaccinations. Not the case.
Okay. I guess that's something.
Well, thanks, Bob. We have a call from Caroline, who's got a question for you. Caroline from Lakewood, how are you doing today?
Fine. I would like to first exceed my responsibility and apologize to the apologists. It seems as though your guest ran into a buzzsaw. Well, excuse me. Have a cat insisting on attention. He ran into something unfailingly polite about Lutherans. They're sort of the Canadians of the religious sect, and they didn't engage you because it would have been confrontational.
So, Caroline, is Lutheran your religious background?
Oh, it's been my family's religion, well, since Norway. which means from conversion. And yes, but my family's also been atheist for at least the three generations I can talk to.
And how about yourself? Are you Lutheran or atheist?
I consider myself a Christian atheist. I still observe the traditional inheritance, but I hate to admit how old I was before it occurred to me that I probably shouldn't be taking communion.
So perhaps a cultural Christian? You appreciate the good works and the generosity, that sort of thing, but the actual spirituality, the superstition, you don't believe in?
Well, it's familiar, and so many of family events are tied up in ritual observance.
I would love to see cultural Christianity be where Christianity evolves to. That is, you can go to church, you can use it for your philanthropy, for your good works, and yet you don't believe the superstition, the supernatural nonsense, and that's okay.
Oh, we never
Everyone accepts you.
As far as I can tell, no one in my family ever went through agnosticism. They were just always flat-out non-deists.
Interesting. Fascinating.
But not apologetic for it either.
Well, to respond to your question, Lutheranism was the predominant, I think, inspiration for this whole conference. They were very polite, which is terrific. I really like polite. You raised an interesting point. Maybe they just were too polite to engage. I'm not sure I gave them that option. I think I was overt enough by saying, you know, come on, guys, I came here for this. You know, work with me here. So I'm not sure that was it. I still suspect that it was more me jumping in their leaky rowboat was not their idea of a good time.
Well, let me ask you one thing. That is, there has been a sponsor of this program from Denmark that's called a couple of times in a row, and it jogged my memory about there being a Lutheran pastor in Denmark who said that the communion rail was open even to atheists. If they had been traditional Lutherans and came and refrained from taking the rail, that he wanted them to feel they were welcome to come in community anyway. And that they haven't been so generous in this side of the ocean.
I'm not familiar with that particular pastor saying such or priest saying such. It might be an open invitation to try and actually get more adherence to say, look, you don't have to be atheistic. You can come take communion and hopefully then believe as we do.
Well, I wondered if that meant that I don't know whether to see this as a halfway measure or as a first step, but I think it's welcome in the right direction.
I'm not sure. Mike, you had something to say.
I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit cynical about this. I've seen a lot of instances where churches want atheists to come there. I can't speak specifically about the situation in Denmark at all. I don't know about that specific church or that pastor, but I know that a lot of times when churches welcome atheists, it's usually we want you to sit there and be quiet, and we don't want you to engage with your opinion. We just want you to be a receptacle for our opinion.
It's a monologue, not a dialogue.
Yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people don't want to hear. They don't want to hear our point of view a lot.
I think my family status is not a secret in our church, and I've never felt preached at.
That's great to hear. I'd love to see that more of a trend.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Caroline. We hope to hear from you. We're, you know, on every Sunday at 3 p.m., and we're always happy to hear local callers. Thank you very much, Caroline.
Thank you.
And I think the last thing was that Caroline was wondering about the spelling of your name, Bob, because it's a little bit tricky for those who are trying to find your writings and keep an eye out for you.
Well, I certainly want potential readers to be able to find the book. It's S-E-I-D-E-N sticker, side-in sticker.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob. We love hearing from our listeners, our local and far away listeners, and we've got an email from a listener who calls himself the Professor from Liverpool, UK. And he says, I guess it is Mike and Sam who do the Camp Quest advert. Are you going to do any more of these? As most people I have met think that it's the best advert on any podcast. It is funny, well-paced, and always makes people smile. Is anyone going to animate them for YouTube? And who writes them?
I just want to say thank you, Professor. I don't know if the professor is a title like the doctor or something like that. But thank you, Professor.
I thought Professor was stuck on an island somewhere.
Oh, it could be that professor. I don't know if that professor had a name. But anyways, I'm sure that Sam is just as flattered as I am that you think, hey, this is really funny. It must be Mike and Sam who did that. But I have to admit that it's not. It's actually Kyle Hepworth and John Kaiser of Seattle Atheist that made those ads for Camp Quest, where Kyle Hepworth did the voice of the devil, and John Kaiser did the voice of both the announcer and Billy in those ads. They wrote John Kaiser wrote them, and they performed them, and we'd love to get more ads from these folks. John and Kyle, hint, hint.
And those ads are for one of our sponsors, Camp Quest, which is a non-theistic summer camp. We're having our inaugural year this year up in Washington with Camp Quest West. There's all kinds of Camp Quests around North America and a few in Europe as well. So
yeah, I think
do check out our sponsors.
I think it's basically, if you want to think of Camp Quest, it's basically the opposite of the thing that Bob went to with kids.
Yes, no vacation Bible school for you. We've got another email from Anita in Toronto. And what does Anita say, Mike?
Anita said that she went to the store and bought some grapefruit juice imported from Florida at the local health food store and neglected to read the label fully. When I got home, I noticed what looked like a Jesus fish on the label. I took a closer look. How the heck did I manage to miss the propaganda of their natural product being just like God intended? I have no idea. This is a weird thing to see in Canada. So I have to ask, is the irrelevant placement of the Jesus fish on food labels as distinct from the kosher symbol, bunnies, green tree, etc., that common in the U.S.? What is an appropriate reaction to buying something blatantly Christian? I honestly felt a little weird and dirty, like I'd unwittingly participated in some kind of support of a perverted cause I don't believe in. Never had the practice of reading the label. More important to me, your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. My thoughts are that, you know, if I want to buy a product and it's good and to some degree, okay, I'll buy the product. If it's really supporting a cause that I don't believe in, you know, I would think twice about it, but I wouldn't feel particularly dirty as if I had, you know, unwittingly engaged in some perversion just by getting a carton of orange juice.
I've seen a bit of pushback against the pink ribbon, the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Some women are saying, you know, I like the idea for a while, but I'm kind of, you know, not so keen anymore.
I am familiar with that as well. I, you know, in the U.S. we have a lot of products that are branded for the Susan G. Komen Cancer Research Foundation, and I do see, based on, you know, how what the percentages are of what gets donated and to what cause and to what aspect of the cause, I do see some pushback against that. First, when I read it, actually, I saw it kind of reminded me of people grousing against buying kosher salt, and so there was actually a little while ago a Christian group that decided they were going to have their own Christian Jesus salt so that no one would have to patronize the Jews by buying kosher salt.
But kosher is something different, though. I mean, with this thing, the Jesus fish is basically denoting the ideology of the people who make the food product, where kosher actually talks about the way it was prepared and the ingredients in it. So I don't know if the comparison is completely fair. I think that this is a bit closer, and the Komen one kind of comes into this as well, a bit closer to the chicken restaurant Chick-fil-A. It's not in this state, but it's around the country, where the people who run the country, the company, actually do have this ideological, fundamentalist Christian bent that they give a lot of money that goes into the company to anti-gay organizations and tend to be a bit of a busybody about the personal lives of the people that work there.
Hmm.
So I think the Komen one's a bit like that, is that I don't want to give to something knowing that part of my money also goes to this stuff. I don't know if that's the case with the orange juice, but or the grapefruit juice, but it could be.
Well, I think both Bob and earlier before the show, Bob and Sam had both mentioned that this reminded them of Dr. Bronner's with a lot of nonsense on the label.
What
the
is Dr. Bronner's?
Peppermint soap. It's a tall bottle of soap. It just has this tiny print. Just goes on and on and on, all in one small font.
And is it religious based?
It's this guy is a he's part of the Order of Essene Rabbis and Soap Makers and this crazy stuff you think you're going to find on some postcard that some homeless guy just wrote over
is,
and over.
Is he
over
serious
again
about this, or is he just messing around?
I think he's serious.
And do you have any compunction about buying Doc Bronner soap?
I don't. No.
All right. Well, so Anita, you know, buy your orange juice or grapefruit juice if you like it. Don't buy it if you don't want to. We've got one more story for the top of the hour, and this is serpent handling West Virginia pastor dies from snake bite.
Well, that's a coincidence. This one came from ABC News with Arlette Sines as the author originally. A serpent-handling West Virginia pastor died after a rattlesnake bit him during a church ritual. Just as a man had apparently watched a snake kill his father years before. Pentecostal preacher Mark Wolford hosted an outdoor service at the Panther Wildlife Management Area in West Virginia Sunday, which he touted on his Facebook page prior to the event. Officials at the Panther Wildlife Management Area said that West Virginia State Park rules prohibit animals other than dogs and cats on the property.
So I imagine that a rattlesnake was not going to be, what I was going to say, would not be kosher in this respect. No, a rattlesnake would not fly within the state park facilities.
What I find incredible about this is some of the people who are trying to be sympathetic. I mean, the guy died. It's a really sad event, but they're trying to be sympathetic and they're sort of kind of trying to celebrate his faith. But I just do not get that. I mean, this guy, his own father died at roughly the same age. The mom of the guy watched her husband and now her son die. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, me playing Russian roulette and I survive and you somehow find something laudable.
Well, forget it, Bob. It's Chinatown. I mean, there's a certain amount of it where if the experience of seeing his father die in the exact same way didn't shake his faith. And again, we were talking about how do we experience these traumatic events, whether something like this only makes your faith stronger or if it shatters it. I think that some people want to believe, they're going to keep believing, regardless of the evidence or the experiences that roll down the pike their way. But this belief is not that unusual. It is actually written up in the Bible.
Well, it is written up in the Bible in Mark 16, saying they shall cast signs in my name. They shall cast out devils and speak in new tongues and take up serpents. But, as Bob informed me a little while ago,
that is inauthentic. That's an added piece.
So,
Sorry, guys.
It's been a pleasure having you here today with us, Bob. Mike, it's been great. I'm Rebecca Friedman. Our music at Ask an Atheist is produced by Chris Coleman. My production assistants today were Darren Garvin and Sam Mulvey. Our post show, we'll be meeting at The Ale House at 5 p.m., which is on Mildred and 19th. Come meet up with us, have a drink, have some conversation. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM media production. Our voicemail is 206-420-0997. Emails at questions@askanatheist.tv.
Clay Radio, your conversations.